We're live with Jess Ian DiOrio. I'm really excited to have her on today because I've heard great things about her for years. She's CMO at Starburst now and previously spent time at Miracle and Acquia and Endeca before that. So excited to dig in. Jess, is there anything I missed about your background?
No, you covered most of it. And thanks for having me. Yeah, I started at Forrester many years ago. That was my very primary education, learning about a lot of different software spaces. And then I went over to work for software companies.
Okay. And what was your first, Endeca?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Awesome. And so I wanted to really dig in quickly on the on your experiences as first 90 days CMO at Miracle and Starburst. It sounds like they were pretty different experiences.
Polar opposite experiences. So I'll start with Miracle. So Miracle was a French founded company. They're in the marketplace software category. So they help companies create their own online marketplaces, much like AWS or Amazon has the largest online marketplace, but this particular model can be utilized by other retailers, B2B companies, et cetera. So pretty cool tech, founded in France, and they hired their head of marketing in the US so that they could grow in the US primarily. So they had a really strong set of clients in Europe already. And when I started, the goal was to grow the presence, the awareness globally, but with a focus on the Americas, and then continue the growth path throughout Europe. So that was interesting because it was an experience where, which I needed at that stage in my career, I started with a team. So there was at least a baseline team of 4 or 5 people. The company was 3 or 4 years old, so it wasn't brand new. There was some infrastructure. There was some data on what was working and what wasn't. It was still a pretty early opportunity. I think I was employee number 50 or so. But there had been a lot of groundwork done. There were successful clients. There were reference points, reference accounts. So there was a lot to work with, and especially having that team already in place. And since I came up through product marketing in my career, I've always needed strong demand gen counterparts to focus on that aspect. I've learned so much over the last, I'd say, 5 years running marketing overall. But at that point, I really needed a team that knew what to do systematically, programmatically, et cetera. So the first 90 days were basically tap in, get to know the space, get to know what had been working and not working on the marketing side, and then start building out some more programs to go out and scale awareness. I'll tell you one fascinating experience. I ended up bringing my former head of demand gen from Acquia there, Hannah, who's awesome. And at Acquia, we had a playbook, and that playbook was everybody's looking for content management. So we're going to go out and get that traffic and convert it. And so we both started at Miracle roughly at the same time. And we're like, let's do the playbook. The playbook didn't work because it was a really early market and nobody was searching for marketplace platforms. So a lot of that early 90 days was, okay, what is our category strategy going to be so that we can engineer awareness for this particular type of technology? And that very much was a lot of what I worked on for my 2.5 years there. So the first 90 days did set up some infrastructure for it, but good lessons learned.
What were the signals that you looked at? Because it seems like you figured that out pretty early.
Well, yeah. Signal one is like firing up paid ads and nobody converting off of them. The search volume wasn't there. It's just a lesson learned, And the real lesson learned is like playbooks don't scale across businesses. Everybody has to bring their brain and figure it out. We didn't have a huge budget, so we weren't dealing with lots of dollars to waste. And so we watched it very closely. It didn't perform. And then we pretty quickly switched gears to an ABM approach, just really going after target accounts. And they had a specific TAM that we could identify and go after. And so in the early days, we had Terminus there as the first platform. So we switched strategies from like broad, let's go get traffic, to, oh, there isn't people looking for this search term. Let's go after the accounts that matter and deliver relevant campaigns.
Mm-hmm. And you were also creating a category with that, like you were starting to build demand.
So it didn't exist. And so it's called enterprise marketplace platforms. I think by Gartner now, Forrester might have a slightly different term as they like to have something slightly different, but it didn't exist back then. There were e-commerce platform waves, and this is a specific type of technology that facilitates marketplace sales. It helps you bring on vendors who offer their products, and then it facilitates the fulfillment on the back end. So it didn't fit into the e-commerce platform view because that was everything from the front end through transactional e-commerce tech. There wasn't a category or a wave or a magic quadrant for marketplace solutions. And the market was a little bit early. There were a couple of competitors, some in Paris where Miracle was founded, some in Australia, some who had actually been started before Miracle, and they were way too early for the market and they failed. So it was an early category. We worked very hard to evangelize it through our success. Just being able to build our brand and awareness, more and more competitors came. And I left 2.5 years ago, but within the last year, there actually was a wave, and I think it's a magic quadrant as well. So that's that point of maturity in the category, but it was a 3 to 5 year journey to get there. Wow. In that category.
Okay. And then tell me about Starburst.
Yeah, so completely different. Starburst founding story, if you'll indulge me for a minute, is super unique. It kind of goes back to 2010. Different company, Hadapt, our founder, Justin Borgman, was at business school. He saw the opportunity in the early days of big data to commercialize a solution that would help people get data out of Hadoop. Everybody was putting data in Hadoop, an open source file storage system. So tons of data. They needed a place to put it. That was cost effective. But once it was there, it was hard to access and analyze. So his first company, Hadapt, sought to make it easy to access and analyze data through using SQL on Hadoop. They were acquired by Teradata a few years later. And then that was when they came to find out about this open source technology, then called Presto, now called Trino. And it was basically SQL on anything, not just SQL on Hadoop. So they started to build, while at Teradata, the first commercial support subscription, added features to the open source project like connectors, security features, et cetera. And then Teradata decided we're not going to focus on open source anymore. And so this team ended up leaving to pursue what they had started there. And that was to create a commercial business supporting the Presto, now Trino, open source project. So that was in 2017. And they bootstrapped because they left Teradata with customers. So they kind of left in partnership with Teradata. They were able to bring some early Starburst customers from Teradata and honor those support contracts. And so that created customers, revenue, and some level of product market fit day one at Starburst. So really successful jumping off point compared to a lot of other startups who take 2 or 3 years to come through and get to that point. But you know what that meant was they could bootstrap. And so again, that's another luxury. They didn't need to go out and raise funding, and Justin really wanted to test the market and not bring in venture capital too early.
Right.
So they sold quite successfully for just over a year. And a year and a half in, it was very clear this was going to be a big business. And that's when they went to raise Series A. And I didn't come on board until just over 2 years of the company's history. And I was the first marketer hired. So then I switched to what I call the dark side of the story, which is the marketing side of the story. Because yeah. Nothing had really been done in those first 2 years. They were bootstrapped. And so there was a little bit of press activity, some community events. But there was no, no content strategy, no like, let's get a leg up on SEO and start optimizing for these terms. All of that, everything had to be built from scratch when I started. So the first 90 days was very much everything from, okay, we need a messaging platform. We need a minimum viable set of sales assets and tools because there were about 30 salespeople in the door already. So I leaned into my product marketing background really quick. We had our first sales kickoff and, I think it was in March 2020. And then I was just starting to pivot to the demand gen side because we needed to get that off the ground quickly. And then the pandemic happened. So my first hire was actually Mandy Darnell, who's awesome. And she was our events hire. And we were planning to do a lot of events. And then all of a sudden, pandemic hits. She onboards as our first remote onboard. And yeah. Did a phenomenal job pivoting to digital, ABM, digital events, et cetera. But That was 90 days. I want to say inside that 90 days, we got the first demand gen campaign out the door at scale, which was we had a book that we had authored with O'Reilly. Those are some of the best performing assets. You know, For Dummies and O'Reilly are just really popular demand gen assets. So a little bit of luck on the timing of that because it had been started well before I started. But we got one really large scale successful demand gen program out the door inside that 90 days. And then post 90 days was our first. Wait, we need to score these. Like these are different, there's different qualities here. And that was the beginning of our MQL journey, which we're now about 5 iterations into what is an MQL, which is, and it's very advanced now. But that's the totally polar opposite 90 day story at Miracle versus Starburst.
And what had at Hadapt, where Justin's first company, What had marketing looked like at that organization?
Very small organization, and they were pretty early stage. I think they had gotten to about 30 people, maybe just shy, but more of a traditional startup where they had the idea, they started building the technology, they were taking it to market. I think they had a head of marketing, but it was probably one or two people underneath. So I don't think it was by any means a mature marketing operation. Probably just kind of getting off the ground, really.
And I always think about marketing as like there are three ways that you can come up in the marketing world. One is creative, which I think is maybe a little bit broad, but it's design. Brand gets many different connotations.
Yeah.
So I don't typically pair that in, but it's like the creative side of the organization, product marketing, and then demand generation. And so when you were brought into Starburst, what was the expectation? Sometimes it's we have a really hungry sales team, but in your case, it sounded like they needed product marketing support first. What was the expectation? Or what?
I think it was, we need a head of marketing. You know, Justin, the CEO, was also the CMO. And I think he's the first to admit that's not his core area of background. If he needs to flex, it'll be on product and engineering, you know, but he was doing the best he could. But I think he knew well enough that it was important and that it wasn't his core skill set. Just like I know well enough that my upbringing is product marketing. And I always need a strong number two to run demand gen. You know, I've learned a million things, but having the reflexes that someone who came up through that side of marketing, you know, that's just never going to be me. Steering the marketing ops roadmap, it's never going to be me. You know, I know enough, but not enough at the same time. So I think he knew enough that he needed someone strong who had some experience in the space, who was startup gritty and had the right attitude. You know, had specific things he was looking for, but he knew enough to know that he just needed a head of marketing. I think he didn't know what he didn't know about how none of the infrastructure was there on the product marketing side, the messaging and positioning side. If you had seen some of the early slides that were used to sell quite successfully, your mind might be blown. But honestly, it was highly authentic to a technical sale, to a technical audience from technical founders. But we needed to transition to scale. We needed to transition to sales consumable. And that's where you need the messaging platform and sort of sales consumable assets and tools that the average person can use versus someone who knows so much about the tech and has an engineering background.
Okay. And is that something you faced at Miracle and Acquia as well, like building for scale?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's been a pattern for my whole career. I mean, I have tended to join relatively early around. I think at Acquia, I might have been employee 200 or something like that. Miracle was about 50. Starburst, it was about 60. All of these companies are different in that they have different levels of marketing maturity at that time, but no matter what, they were startups. And often what I've provided first is the value around the messaging platform differentiation, who's the audience, what's the category strategy. And then from there, it depends on what the company needs, but I can flex into demand gen if I have to. It's not ideal. It's much easier for me to flex into creative, as you mentioned, that being our third area, because I've always just been I just love creating things. I love building things. And so it's natural for me to want to spend time thinking about creative branding strategies that augment how we're reaching the community we're going after.
Yeah. And then, so you've been at, when I look at your resume, I see two very technical companies in terms of when I think about Acquia and then Starburst. I know less about Miracle.
And Deca is definitely highly technical too. That was another data and analytics company. It looked a little different, but that's what it was.
Yeah. Right. So not typically marketing friendly, although, you know, that's kind of a generalization, right? But I think how a lot of marketers struggle with communicating their value across the organization. And so how did you think about that coming into a company that had no marketing previously, and then at Acquia, where I imagine there was a microscope on marketing and making sure I know the open source community can be fairly rigorous on marketers and not want.
I think it's maybe it's best talked about through the lens of we had hired a junior marketer a couple years back, and she was coming out of a marketing tech company into our Starburst highly technical company. It gave me an opportunity to reflect on how I had honed my skills over the years to focus on the technical audience. And one thing remains, which is like using basic words and speaking like a human will always resonate. But really with the technical audiences, you have to think not like a marketer, but like you're communicating technically to someone who wants to understand how to do something. So like I studied instructional design in college, and that would be more like user manuals or directions. One of my favorite projects was actually breaking down the manual for the game Mousetrap, which like you actually read the directions, you'd never figure out how to play that game. But anyways, there was some technical underpinnings, and I had a market research background as well. And so those tended to be pretty influential in my career, both because I'm curious, but also I had some foundational experience on the best form of communication is explaining somebody how to do something and explaining it as simply and clearly as possible. When you're in technical marketing or technical sales, like that's all people want. They want technical how-to, best practices. Yes, we can flex in thought leadership and how we can change their way of living. But when it comes to the hands-on keyboards people, they want to know how to do something better than they're doing it today. So thinking about that background in instructional design and really being clear, I had the opportunity to train that marketer out of saying cool buzzwords you're marketing to a marketer, completely different game. And in fact, my experience at Drip was a hard lesson there, because that was the only marketing tech that I was at where it was like about engaging people with cool language and being funny and using GIFs. And like, not to say you can't use GIFs with a technical audience, but there's a very clear information transfer value system here with technical sales. And so you have to sort of unlearn trying to make things sexy or funny or cool and learn how to talk short, well, clearly, and transfer value. You know, that's the most important thing to a marketing audience. Entertainment might be transferring value. And in fact, that's how Drift, I think, has been very successful. To a technical audience, edutainment is the only path if you're going to be entertaining. Otherwise, just be clear and straightforward and transfer value on how you're going to help them execute whatever their job is better.
Right. So it's understanding kind of the general personality type of the audience.
We used to look at emails and the draft would be like, we've got something awesome to share, and be like, cross the word awesome out. And there'd be three blocks of text, and I'd be like, you need to use bullets, and they need to have three or four words in them. And this one needs to be super technical, you know? And so it's a skill, you know, you have to build it, and it's fun in a different way. It's a different type of puzzle to figure out.
Right.
Maybe it's harder to learn, but certainly useful, and something that once you build that skill, you can build a very successful career on it, because it's not super easy.
Yeah. What are you doing on a week-to-week, a month-to-month basis to work with your executive team to let them know what's happening and get buy-in across the organization?
Yeah. Well, I'd say the biggest thing that I represent for the exec team is our category strategy right now. And that is, it's been an interesting opportunity for Starburst to have a better way to differentiate and explain what we do. Before we had this strategy, we were getting confused with a bunch of other markets, which if you gave us an RFP for any of those markets, we wouldn't fare well. Yeah. So we aligned and agreed upon the category strategy, but that was an educational journey that spanned exec team plus board. And now that we're in this journey, we have cross-functional support. And that was what I was adamant about, is that you can't tell, you know, marketing's not gonna go execute a category strategy, it's a company strategy. Category is the strategy, if you've read the Play Bigger book. So we have aligned customer success, product, sales, engineering. You know, the CEO, Justin, is one of the leaders of category strategy, along with myself leading the marketing parts of it. I shoulder a lot of the, I would say, project management of category strategy in addition to the marketing execution. But we have monthly meetings where we check in on our progress, what our plans are cross-functionally that quarter. And we mind it very closely. And I have a ton of metrics I provide around how the marketing piece is going, but we're reminding it cross-functionally. And I think that's critical to a successful category strategy. That's a lot of what I talk about with the exec team. Of course, right now we look at the economy and we look at, you know, signal, is there any impact on the business? Fortunately, we're in good shape right now. And we recently raised, so we're in a good spot, but that's certainly something that I'll bring to the table, because if we were to receive an impact, it would be an early signal through traffic or conversion or something like that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And then, so Starburst, you were building out the team from scratch. But throughout your career, you've done, I mean, you've already named a couple of people on your team who have gone on to have really successful mm-hmm. careers. I see you as one of the CMOs in Boston who has a coaching tree. I always think about like I grew up in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. So a big college basketball town, and was always paying attention to, okay, head coach Dean Smith, who are the people who are coming from under his tutelage to go on and coach. But how are you thinking about recruiting? Like what are you, what's your approach to recruiting?
I did a video on this, like, you know, just to explain sort of what I'm looking for, and it never changes by stage. I'm always looking for potential. I'm always looking for attitude, and I need people who are very bright and like, and hardworking. So I have a variety of ways to work that out. Ideally, subject matter expertise would be part of the equation, but it's not required as long as we get the right talent on the team. Right now I'm hiring for a VP of demand gen, and that role has very specific requirements because we have two sales motions. We have an enterprise motion. We have a product-led growth, more bottoms-up motion, looking for someone with SaaS B2B experience. So when I hire a high-level person, I have a very specific set of things that we need as a business. For people that are just starting out, I'm looking for good attitudes. I'm looking for scrappy hard workers and people that can adjust and be agile to changing environments, which, you know, happens all the time in startups. I'm looking for people who show that they put the work in, which means they show up to the interview super prepared with interesting ideas and questions. So they're some lightweight things.
What are the non-starters? What are the things that...
If you didn't do any research before you got on the phone with me, I will cut it short. It's just, we were also limited with time. There are a million other things we could all be doing at any point in time. If you didn't put the work in before you got on the phone with me, I will just say, like, thanks for your time. This was my expectation. It didn't work out here, but I just wanted to share the feedback with you so that you can have a better shot next time. And sometimes people don't react well to that, but time is so precious. I have three young kids, I've got a big job, and it's a non-starter for me that you didn't put the work in to prepare before the interview, because that just shows me something about your work ethic. You have to have a question ready that's relevant and isn't generic. So you have to have done some groundwork for sure.
And what stage are you, what stage are you coming into the interview process? I'm guessing it depends on who
you're hiring. It does depend, but you know, at Starburst, we've never had, for marketing at least, dedicated recruiting resources. So most of the people on the team I've gone out to find on my own. So what that means is oftentimes I'm the phone screen. And so a lot of my job is recruiting. Now that the team is larger, so we've gone from me as one person to 30 people on the team, just inside marketing. The company's gone from about 60 to 430 in the last 2.5 years.
Yeah.
So tremendous growth, still don't have a dedicated recruiter. But when it comes to a senior position, I'm spending a ton of my time on that personally, reviewing resumes coming in or going out and trying to find talent. For jobs that aren't direct reports of mine, now I'll come in later in the process, if at all. So we're at that stage now where I'm not always part of it. If I am, it's because somebody wants me to help them secure a candidate.
Okay. And then you mentioned attitude or optimism as one of the things you're looking for in folks. How are you interviewing for that?
Yeah. I look for people who are generally seeing positive sides of things. You know, I look for someone who spends too much time complaining or placing blame on external factors. And I look for people that take accountability and have a positive attitude about learning and mistakes you made. I'm happy to talk about them. Here's what I learned, and here's how I avoid it in the future. I mean, like, to me, a positive attitude is not just happy. It's like someone who can take things in stride, learn from them, make sure they learn from them and move forward and you know, be open to admitting their mistakes, which shows humility. Those are all pieces of good attitude for me. Yeah.
Okay. And then we only have a couple minutes left, but you're launching a PLG product, or you've already launched a PLG product?
Yes. It's called Starburst Galaxy.
Yeah. So you have a high ACV kind of go-to-market model. How have you thought about adding this product-led growth or go-to-market model into the
market? it's fascinating. You know, the prior journey I had with sort of freemium product-led growth at Acquia was very different. It was in a different web content management space. And any web developer, no matter which company size you're at, would probably want to try Acquia Cloud, which was the parallel. So when we look at Starburst, and we have Starburst Enterprise, that's very much built for a different size company and different use cases. So that's built for large companies, financial services, insurance, pharma, very big companies that span all interest industries that typically have data that lives on-prem, and they have newer data in the cloud that we can help them connect. So it's a different set of challenges that exist primarily with larger companies where we're highly differentiated. And then we look at Starburst Galaxy, and we look below $1 billion in revenue for the target market. And the product itself is a typical SaaS where we're managing it for the customer, whereas the enterprise product is deployed and managed by the customer. We can support them, but different delivery mechanisms. The SaaS product has a variety of different consumption models. There's so many options for how you can try and take advantage of Starburst Galaxy, but the pain points it's addressing or the use cases are also very different. So the short answer to your question is, we figured this out because this was the primary way Starburst started, serving the higher end of the market, highly differentiated, very successful. And we have now a marketing playbook where we know how to hit the goals there. When we turn to the new PLG motion, this is net new for us inside the business. So we're studying the audience, the patterns, the use cases, the message market fit alongside the product journey all at once. Honestly, it's fascinating, but it's earlier stage. And we're very excited about it. Kind of we view it as the delivery vehicle for the future of the business. So we're very focused on getting it off the ground successfully right now.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Totally different sets of tools though. I mean, everything's so different across these two motions. You know, what you would adopt for tools with an enterprise motion, your heavy ABM, you've got personalization, you know, everything we've been trying to do as a marketing function for enterprise B2B, it's still relevant there, just some newer tools that are a little bit better. But the PLG motion it's a different set of tools. It's a different set of signals, and it's a different set of, you know, funnel conversion metrics. It's so different. But honestly, it's a lot of growth for the team to learn this, and, you know, so yeah, that's the big focus.
Will you have two separate teams focused on each product?
Right now we have a subset of marketing, or we definitely don't have two teams. I wouldn't rule it out for the future, but there's benefits and drawbacks both ways to having two different teams. And I don't like redundancies when I always work for small companies. And so I'm always looking for efficiencies, and the argument can be made dedicated teams are more efficient, but the same argument can be made that there's redundancies with separated teams, and, you know, room for friction within the function, which I'm all about reducing and removing friction. We have to mind this all the time when we're growing really quickly, we hire new people, you know, and then we have to redefine everything so that people are clear on roles and responsibilities. So we just have to move fast, and we don't have time for friction.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much.
All right. That's it. That was easy. Yep. Yeah. Awesome. Question for you. What do you love most about marketing?
Let's see. I love the puzzles.
Me too.
I love one of my favorite exercises is going through the buyer's journey and thinking about like the awareness, pain in market and customer stage, and thinking about the different inflection points that those people go through in order to end up needing or wanting to purchase your product, purchase a product. And so I like that. And then it mixes well with consulting because ultimately I get to see how a lot of people purchase and learn about a lot of different industries. So I think that's
a bunch of different puzzles. I'm picturing you like pulling out a stocking and all these different puzzles that people put in the stocking. You play with one minute, and then you're going to go play with the other puzzle 1 minute.
Yeah, that's me. I'm a little bit ADD. So yeah, that is, I'm kind of all over the place.